Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by ACR Poker, where this weekend we're starting off our Winter OSS. This is a brand new tournament series. I like to pronounce it WOSS, W-O-S-S, featuring $30 million in guaranteed prize pools and a special $35,000 leaderboard that is not coming out of the prize pools, but rather being added by ACR Poker itself. My name is Clayton Fletcher, and I'm in New York City, but not for long. I am departing this weekend for Ontario, Canada. So I'll be performing at Yuck Yucks in Niagara Falls and Burlington. I've also got a book signing or two set up in the Great White North, and I hope to see some of you there. All the details can be found on twitter.com/ClaytonComic. Many of you know I have a new book out. It's called The ROI of LOL. Even though ROI is in the title, it has nothing to do with poker or your charts and graphs of playing poker and your results in tournaments or anything like that. It's a book about using laughter in business, and I know that that is not what you guys are used to hearing me talk about, but let me just say real quick here, becoming a published author is something I never thought would happen to me in my life. I've co-authored this book with a good friend of mine who's also a CEO of a PR firm here in New York. And the two of us joined forces to talk about using comedy skills in the workplace. And now I'm on tour. I'm going to all these different bookstores and I'm meeting people and shaking hands and kissing babies and signing signing books. It's kind of ridiculous. It's a life I never thought that I would have. As a poker playing comedian, I did not think that I'd ever be able to add the term author to my resume, but here we are. And it was very hard writing a book. And so mad respect to Alex Fitzgerald and Andrew Brokus and anyone else who's ever sat down and written a book about poker, because I can tell you, as hard as you think it's going to be, it ends up being 4 or 5 times harder. It was a grueling process. And now I'm in the book promotion phase. And if you guys want to support the ROI of LOL, all you have to do is go to Amazon, look up the book and leave a review, a word or two, a sentence or two, 5 stars, whatever. We just need to get the review numbers up so that our book will continue to stay high and mighty on the business charts. Visit ROILOL.com for more about that. All right. Well, today, you know, it's been a few weeks now since we've just had a chance to do a solo project here on the podcast. So I'm going to get back to that bracelet event we were talking about a few episodes ago. By the way, guys, thank you so much for the nice feedback about last week's episode featuring the one and only Derek Killingbird Tenbush, who I believe did actually hit his 10,000 viewing hours goal on Twitch. So congrats to Derek for that, and thank you all for participating in the various Twitch streams that Derek put on in the month of October. Yeah, I thought, you know, he brought a great hand for us to talk about. It's always such a pleasure to have TPE's very own head honcho here on the podcast that he started so many years ago. If you didn't know, by the way, the podcast you're currently listening to, Tournament Poker Edge, is the longest running poker strategy podcast in the world. So we're very proud of this. We're going to keep it going. Thanks to ACR Poker. So yeah, let's get into it, guys. We were playing in an online bracelet event. Now, to compete in this event, you have to be in either New Jersey or Nevada. I think that some foreigners can play as well, but you don't encounter too many. Every once in a while, you'll see something like Russian Federation on there. But yeah, mostly the players are from these two states. So I'm not really sure if it qualifies as a world series of poker bracelet if you win one. But, you know, here we go. We were playing this thing. It's a 1K bounty event. So it's 300 of the prize pool goes to the bounty prize pool, and then the other 600 goes to the main prize pool, and then 100 to the house, the website, if you will. The blinds at this point were 200, 400 with a 40 ante per player, 8-handed table, and the average stack was 28,000, and we had 37,000, third place at our table, and doing quite well, up from our 20K starting stack. The player in second position, who I had marked down as mostly tight, opens to 840 off of a stack of 15,000. So his M is about 15, and he had around 38 big blinds. The action folds to Clayton in the small blind, holding pocket nines. So how to play your pocket nines in this situation? Opponent has 38 bigs. He is known to be a mostly tight player, but I didn't have him marked down as a complete rock. So the fact that he's open from semi-early position, eight-handed, doesn't necessarily mean the nines are no good. I decided to go with a three bet here. I put in 2640, so just about three times the original open, and my opponent decided to call. So at this point, there's about 6,000 in the middle, and our opponent has 12,000 in his stack, so his SPR is around 2. And the flop comes queen of diamonds, eight of diamonds, tray of hearts. Queen, eight, tray with two diamonds. Hero in the small blind holding the nine of diamonds, nine of hearts. Well, this is clearly not the best flop in the world for pocket nines, but in this situation, I don't think it's very bad. I mean, we've got a pair between top and middle pair. We've got backdoor, straight, and flush possibilities, and we've got the lead in the hand, meaning we had put in the last raise before the flop. I'm sure we can check. There's nothing wrong with checking on this flop. We have a medium strength hand, and generally you don't want to build a bigger pot when your hand is medium strength. But I went for the bet here. Part of it is because I want to have access to my opponent's bounty. If things improve for me, like if I happen to run out a straight or a flush, I want to be sure we can get all the chips into the middle, which should not be terribly hard to do with an effective SPR of 2. So yeah, just continuation bet here. Also, I think the nines could be good, but my opponent could be drawing very live with a hand like King Jack, especially if he has a diamond. Most opponents will probably call at least one small bet with those hands, thereby giving us some value, but also a little bit of protection. Now, Andrew Brokus talks about this quite a bit. In our minds as players, we're generally thinking whether we want our opponent to call in the case of a value bet or fold in the case of a bluff. But in fact, many hands, if not most hands, benefit from folds and calls, kind of depending on what part of your range you're in and what part of his range your opponent happens to be in. So all that to say, I don't really mind if he calls, and I definitely also don't mind if he folds, but I decided to go for a sizing of about one-third of the pot. I put in 2,200 into the 6K pot, and my opponent did decide to call. So now there's 10,400 in the middle, and opponent only has about 10,000 left, so he's down to a pot-sized bet, just a little bit less. And the turn comes the five of hearts. So our board is now queen of diamonds, eight of diamonds, tray of hearts, five of hearts, hero holding the nine of diamonds, nine of hearts. So a pretty safe turn card. I mean, if we weren't behind on the flop, we're not behind now in all likelihood. I decided to go for a shove here. So I'm hoping to get called by a hand that I can beat, obviously. Something like ace-8 suited, which may have played this way, possibly 8-7 suited. So really just targeting kind of that middle pair and also flush draws, maybe like ace-4 of diamonds or perhaps ace-4 of hearts, which has now picked up a straight flush draw on the turn. So there are some hands that can give us some action that we are hoping do decide to call. There are also some hands that we wouldn't mind seeing fold that currently have us beat, namely Queen 10 suited, Queen Jack suited. Remember, this opponent is known to be somewhat tight, or mostly tight, so he may actually find a fold with top pair here. Folding top pair with his stack isn't so bad. I mean, he starts the hand with 38 big blinds, remember, and I am showing incredible strength. Also, this is a freeze out event, so if he happens to go busto, he cannot buy back into it, which may affect some players' decision making. And basically, I'm not expecting him to fold a queen, but I do know that sometimes people do that. Maybe not ace queen, maybe not king queen, but other queens I think might be able to go away. I don't believe this opponent should ever have pocket jacks, but he could actually have pocket tens and didn't feel comfortable getting the whole stack in before the flop versus a small blind 3-bet. So not really sure how many hands I can get to fold that I am currently beating, but there are almost certainly some such hands. So I shove and my opponent does fold. We'll never know. I'm sorry, guys. I know last week Derek called for the podcast so that we could know what in the world the opponent was bluffing with. If you remember last week's episode, that one was pretty wild. But yeah, that was a $2 tournament. This is a 1K. It's a little bit different. Anyway, let's do another hand. The blinds went up. They were 300 and 600 with a 60 ante at this point. So this is a little while later, two levels later. At this point, we had 42,000 in the stack and the average was 30K. So we're doing great. The action folds all the way around to Clayton in the small blind holding the ace of spades, jack of clubs. So fold to me in the small blind. We're going to play small blind versus big blind hero with ace jack off suit. So let's talk about the big blind who has about 34,000. So he'll be the effective stack in this situation. He's just above average. He's got 57 times the big blind. His M is 25. His playing style so far has been mostly what I would call average for this tournament, meaning that he's a little on the loose side, a little too passive, maybe makes a few mistakes that players on other sites might not make. You got to remember, this is a 1K, but it's also a bracelet event, and a lot of players are bracelet hunting on WSOP.com. So I'd say this opponent is not good, not bad, just average, and I decide to go for a limp here. Now, you guys know I've talked about this a lot on the podcast. I incorporate a lot of limping into my blind versus blind game pre-flop because I think many players don't realize that they are raising too often from the big blind. So if I limp in with strong hands, weak hands, and everything in between, like at this stack depth, remember we're playing 57 big blinds effective, I'm pretty much limping everything. And that includes seven deuce. That includes pocket aces. I mean, getting priced in, maybe I would fold seven deuce against certain opponents, but not this one. I would definitely want to see a flop or maybe turn that into one of my pre-flop bluffs where I limp and then re-raise him with it. Because you know what? Blockers be damned. If your opponent is going to raise every time you limp on in, you can pretty much three bet with impunity and expect him to fold quite a bit. And then probably not raise you light again the next time it comes all the way around to you in the small blind and you limp in once more. So yeah, there's a lot of kind of meta game going on, sort of just player on player dynamics when you're in these situations. And I think it's much easier to play for a limp planning to three bet rather liberally than it is to raise from the small blind and end up either having to call a three bet from out of position or just play an inflated pot from out of position. So in this situation, obviously with ace jack is a very strong hand versus any two cards. And if I limp in and get raised, I'm absolutely going to put this hand into my three betting range. But in this situation, my opponent decided to check. So we're going to see a flop. It's just a limp pot, blind versus blind. And now with 1680 in the middle, the flop comes ace of hearts queen of clubs, five of clubs, ace, queen, five with two clubs, hero with the ace of spades, jack of clubs. So we've got top pair, backdoor straight draw, backdoor flush draw. Really, really great flop for our hand. I decide to bet just one big blind, 600, the minimum, into the 1680 pot, and my opponent calls. So now, with 2880 in the middle, we're going to see a turn card, and that is the seven of diamonds. So our board is now ace of hearts, queen of clubs, five of clubs, seven of diamonds, hero with the ace jack, and the action's on me. You can obviously check here. If we check, we're hoping our opponent tries to value bet a queen or maybe just go for a bluff, and then we can check call or even maybe sometimes check raise. I think many players underestimate how strong ace jack is in this spot. I mean, there are so many hands we can beat that might actually call the check raise on the turn, including worse ace x, which would be our primary target for doing so. But there are also flush and straight draws out there that may call that check raise as well. So I decided to bet. You know, I see the value in checking, maybe going for a check raise or a check call, depending on sizing or whatever. But I decided to bet, and I don't like my sizing here. I put in half the pot, 1440 into 2880. I think I'd either need to go bigger or smaller. I feel like that 3-to-1 pot odds isn't quite right. I want to give my opponent 2-to-1 or 4-to-1. I think we can actually go for a pot size bet on the turn. I think it's very difficult, especially with my usual table image. I think it's very difficult for anyone to put me on an ace when I didn't raise before the flop. Unless they listen to the podcast and they know that I typically don't like to raise anything from my small blind at this stack depth. I mean, yeah, obviously, if you have 20 bigs, you're trying to get all in with all your aces pre-flop. If you have, you know, 200 bigs, then maybe you want to do some more raising. But yeah, I think in this mid-range, like 40 to 80 big blinds, it's totally fine just to do, you know, a ton of limping blind versus blind. It's one strategy. I believe it's solver approved. Maybe somebody out there can tell me what solvers think of just, you know, limping 100% before the flop. Blind versus blind. Anyway, I decided to bet. I think I can bet bigger and certainly get called by an ace and probably get called by a queen and a lot of draws as well. So yeah, I'm not happy with this sizing, but that's what happened. And the opponent calls. So now there's 5,700 in the middle and the river pairs the board with a five of spades. Final board, ace, queen, five, seven, five, and no flush came in. Actions on Clayton. Well, obviously this five of spades probably didn't change anything. It's unlikely that our opponent called us on the turn with just a five. I didn't really have too many fives in his range for calling on Fourth Street. So really it's a question of, do we want to try to bet and get value from a queen again? Keep in mind, guys, we don't get value from worse aces anymore because we have a chop. Everybody would have aces and fives with a queen kicker. So we cannot value target ace X anymore. So, I mean, if we check, I don't think we're ever going to fold under any circumstances. So we can check and maybe try to induce a bluff, or we can bet and try to go for value versus a hand like queen 10 or something like that, that might not be able to call. I mean, I'm not sure how much this guy has played with me on this site, but believe me, my reputation on this site is that I never have it. So that's because I usually don't, but this time I do. So maybe that's a case for betting and trying to get a queen to pay us off. I decided to go for a check. I feel like eliminating the possibility of getting ace X to pay us off and just, you know, end up betting and then getting a chop kind of discounted the value of the value bet for me. So I decided to check, hope that my opponent missed a draw or decides to turn whatever he has into a bluff. And that's not what happened. I checked and my opponent checked behind. So we won a pretty decent medium-sized pot versus four of diamonds, tray of hearts. So let's notice, everybody, that on the flop, our opponent has a gut shot. But on the turn, he's got two of them. And in his shoes, he may go for the raise there, especially if he thinks that I would be raising pre-flop from the small blind with my strongest ace X. So when you have eight outs, as he does here, sometimes it's okay to raise on the turn as a semi-bluff, especially when you think Clayton could be betting with a hand that can't beat an ace. So, yeah, that was a fun one. We end up winning the pot. But look at the opponent. You know, here he gets to the river. He ends up with four high, which is the second worst possible hand at the moment. Many of us always bet with our very worst hands when we get to the river and we miss and we have four high or five high or something like that. We always bet. For whatever reason, our opponent decided not to bet the four tray. I wonder whether he ever bets anything here on the end, because look, he doesn't have any clubs in his hand, which increases the likelihood that I was betting on the come with a flush draw all along. And now he doesn't want to lose this pot with four high when I have something like jack high and miss my clubs. Basically, by not betting this hand, our opponent is announcing that he has no bluffs at all on this river card, which is fine because the board did pair and the five didn't change anything and all that. But I don't know. I wonder about that. I don't think it would have worked this time, of course, because I had an ace and I wasn't going anywhere. But I do have to wonder if the theoretically correct play anyway would be for the opponent to bet the four high. All right, let's do one more a little bit later in the tournament. The blinds were 350 and 700 with a 70 ante. At this point, we had 55,000 in the stack when the average was 32K. And we're cruising right along, and the action folds in this hand to Jonathan Dockler, who I have tangled with quite a bit. I feel like every single time I play on WSOP.com, I see Jonathan in the streets, you know, battling and everything. So the action folds to him on the button, and he opens to 1,400. Now, he's only got 17,000 in his stack, so just about one half of an average stack. Also, he has 23 big blinds. His M is 10. He's not doing well. So it folds to him on the button, and he opens for the minimum. I am in the small blind with the ace of hearts, 10 of spades. So ace 10 offsuit, facing a min raise from a good, talented player on the button. I decide to go for a 3-bet. I made it 4,445. And the reason my sizing is a little bit smaller than what I might normally do here is because of Jonathan's shortish stack, right? It shouldn't be too hard to play against that kind of stack where he's only got an M of 10. So 3-betting small here really has the same effect as 3-betting a normal size against, obviously a bigger stack. So it's all about maneuverability and being able to figure out what to do if he happens to shove on me right now. Spoiler alert, that would be call, but he's not going to do it. Anyway, so we 3-bet to 44.45. The big blind folds and Dockler calls. So we're going to see a flop with these shallow stacks that I've made shallow with my 3-bet. Like, the pot is already 10,000 and my opponent only has 12,500. So his SPR is 1.25 or so. And the flop comes king of diamonds, six of diamonds, four of spades. King, six, four with two diamonds. A complete whiff for Hero holding the ace of hearts, 10 of spades. But that's not going to stop me. You guys know me better than that. I went for a continuation bet. I put in 3,500 into the 10K pot. And I cannot tell you how much I hate this bet sizing. There's no reason for me to bet 35% of the pot when my opponent is now on a short stack. He's got something like 23% of his chips already in the middle. There's just no reason. I mean, any small bet would probably do the same trick that this larger flop bet does for me. So I really, really hate this sizing. If I could go back and do it all again, I would have put in just like, I don't know, like 2,200 or something like that. There's nothing, and I mean nothing, that 3,500 is going to do that 2,200 wouldn't when my opponent only has 12.5K remaining. So yeah, really bad bet sizing by me. I don't like it at all. I actually prefer shoving because at least that puts pressure on him. So yeah, I hate my 3,500. Opponent calls and he leaves himself with 9,000 behind. And the pot is now 17,500. So opponent has just barely over half a pot size bet left. And the turn comes the queen of hearts. So our board is now king, six, four, queen with two diamonds on the flop. And I decide, now that I've picked up a gut shot and I probably have a live overcard and my opponent probably doesn't want to bust out of the freeze-out bounty tournament, I decide to shove, and he snap called immediately with pocket aces and basically owned my soul as usual. I hate playing against you, Jonathan Dockler. Very, very sneaky. At some point, now that I look back at this hand, at some point, some kind of warning red flag should have gone off in my head. I mean, these guys don't call three bets with 23 big blinds unless they have a big hand, right? A monster, aces and kings. Everything else is pretty much getting all in with me versus my three bet, or they're just folding before the flop. You know, look, I tried to steal from the button, Clayton three bet. I'm just going to get out of this one. I'll leave myself with 21 big blinds and live to fight another day. That's what Jonathan Dockler, a very experienced, very avid WSOP.com player that, you know, I play with almost every time I turn my computer on, there he is. So yeah, I should have known at some point, I should have figured out that this guy was playing me for a fool. But that moment didn't come until after I lost this substantial pot, which actually dropped me almost all the way back to average when I had been cruising along. It just goes to show, when you're playing tournament poker, you can't take one hand off. You can't play anything by rote. You can't let your focus slip for even a moment. So that's not good, and I'm really, really regretful about everything about this hand. I don't mind, actually, the pre-flop three bet. And as I said earlier, if Jonathan shoves, I think I do need to call, you know, just given the price and everything. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't love it having to put all those chips in pre-flop. And then especially I would hate it finding out I was up against aces this time. But yeah, he should have some four bet shoves in his range that I can call against. Again, he only starts with 23 times the big blind. But yeah, that was pretty brutal. You guys, let me know what you think about all three of these hands on the TPE Discord. There's a link in the description of this podcast. And if you click that link, it takes you straight to the Tournament Poker Edge Discord. And you can join us for chit chat about the hands we talk about on the podcast or whatever else is on your mind. It's a very active community, and we really love all of our TPE members who have joined the TPE Discord. Also, this Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time here in the States, it is the TPE free roll on ACR Poker. Our friend Derek Killingbird Tenbush will be hosting that event on his Twitch stream at twitch.tv/Killingbird. If you're not yet on ACR Poker, now's the time to join. You can get a 100% first time deposit bonus up to $2,000 just by using the promo code TPE. And for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, and with special thanks as always to our very generous sponsor, ACR Poker, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas plays. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. I love it. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Oh, whoa. She can't read them, I hold the face. She's got to
love it, it's not rough, it isn't fun.